I'd like to start each message with a couple of thoughts that will inspire you. And this morning's thoughts come from a book that I recently picked up at the Golden Retriever Nationals in St. Louis, and it's called Really Important Stuff My Dog Has Taught Me. See, I'm getting ready to adopt a Golden Retriever, and I'm really excited about it. The first inspiration is this. You don't have to roll over and play dead every time that you're asked to. Pretty good wisdom. And the second one is this. Don't feel as if you have to change the whole world. Just try to make your corner a little better. As always, it is so good to be with you, and I truly mean it when I say that I enjoy our time together at the Holy Mass each week. There is nothing, and I mean nothing, like belonging to a loving and caring community where people really care about you. And that's what exists here at St. Albert the Great. In this morning's gospel story, Jesus is continuing to make his way to Jerusalem, where the cross and the empty tomb await him. And it was during these travels, as you might imagine, that Jesus crossed paths with all kinds of people in all kinds of situations. But the person that Jesus encountered in today's reading was so significant that it is recorded in three of the four gospel accounts. Anytime you see that, you know there's substance to the story. And the added benefit of having three accounts is that it helps to fill in the blanks, so to speak, of the story in order that we can get a more full picture of what really transpired and took place. So our outline for this morning will go like this. First of all, we'll learn something about the man himself, and then we will look at two significant events which take place as Jesus interacts with the man. Now, what makes these events so unique and so utterly fascinating is that they're not recorded in any other encounter that Jesus had with people. So once again, that is a substantial thing. So let's begin by understanding the person. We don't have a name like Zacchaeus or Bartimaeus, which Jesus is about to encounter very shortly, but we do have descriptors of this man. There's three. One is he's rich, meaning that he's financially well off. He's young, meaning that he's in his late 20s or early 30s. And that he is a ruler, meaning that he has influence within his community. And in all three stories, all indications are that he was well-liked and respected in his community, particularly since we read that he had an entourage that was following him around wherever he went. He was also a devout Jew. He says that, in his own words, from his days as a young boy, he always observed and followed God's commands. When Jesus quizzed him about obeying the commandments like don't kill, don't commit adultery, don't steal, don't lie, don't be jealous of what others have, and honor your father and mother, the man's response to Jesus was that he had done all of these things impeccably. And the only other person in the Bible that I know that fit that bill was Paul, the apostle, who in the third chapter of Philippians, he tells the church that in regards to following the Lord's commands, he was faultless. Another thing that we know about this man is that he was sincere. We know this, first of all, because what does he do? He runs up and he kneels at the feet of Jesus as a sign of profound humility and respect for who Jesus is. Also, Jesus makes no mention of any malice or ill intent that this man had. And boy, if anybody could read right through you, it was Jesus. You couldn't pull any wool over his eyes. So there's no mention of that. And finally, and I think the reason that the man came to Jesus in the first place was that his faith wasn't working for him, and he needed answers. You could almost describe the man's condition as being uneasy with himself. It's sort of like a dull and a nagging pain in his soul that just wouldn't go away. Let me ask you, have you ever felt within yourself that there has to be more to your faith than what you're experiencing? You ever felt that? Or you may be feeling that way right now as we look into the gospel story. On the exterior of this man's life, it seemed that he was in the good graces of God, because during that day there was the popular notion that if you were financially well off, this was a sign that God was blessing you. Yet we see that his treasure was not bringing him peace with God. He was uneasy. He was dissatisfied. Let me ask you again this morning, have you ever felt that way in your own life? It's sort of like you struggle and you strive. You set these goals in life and you finally reach the apex of what you feel is the great measure of success for your life. And then when you're on the top of the mountain, it doesn't satisfy you as you thought it would. It just doesn't have the significance and meaning that it does. Well, it was this type of uneasiness that drove the man to the feet of Jesus in order to ask the burning question that was on his heart, the question that we ask too, and it is this: good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life? What must I do to inherit eternal life? And Matthew really helps and assists us in understanding the depth of this man's struggle, because after Jesus responds by saying to him to obey God's commands, and he lists five commands out of the Ten Commandments, the man responds to Jesus this way. He says, "Master, all these I have kept. What is it that I still lack?" You feel that sense of searching? What is it that I still lack? Good teacher, tell me exactly what it is that will relieve this aching, this pain in my heart. And you might be asking the same question yourself right now. It feels like there's something lacking or something that's missing in your life. You may have a lot of things out there, but you just don't feel satisfied. You don't feel fulfilled. And you wonder to yourself, what will fill this void in my life? Well, by this point, the man now has Jesus' full and undivided attention. Jesus is really paying attention to him. And so the stage is set where we move into the two significant events between the man and Jesus that are recorded in no other stories in the gospel. That's substantial. Remember that. The first event is this, and it's a quote right out of the gospel reading, and it's this: Jesus, looking at him, loved him. Jesus, looking at him, loved him. Now, while Jesus showed his love for us in many ways in the gospels, it's only in this story, it's only in this instance that we experience the feeling of that love coming directly from Jesus. The feeling of that love. Think of it this way. Jesus looking at that man with those soft gazing eyes and that smile that was signature Jesus. And then Jesus pats the man on the shoulder as a great sign of his love for him. Now, this is substantial, and it's really important if you want to grasp the meaning of the message today to get in touch with how that man must have felt when Jesus looked at him, the same way that he looks at you. So try to get in touch with this. Here's a possibility. Can you remember a time in your life when you felt that the person that you were talking to genuinely cared for you? I mean, you knew it. You knew that they cared for you. They had no ulterior motive. There was no hidden agenda. They just cared about you. You could see it in their eyes. You could see it in their smile. You could see it in their gestures. We all want people like that in our lives, don't we? Well, of course we do. And that's the feeling that Jesus, God in the flesh, offers this man. So no wonder this story made a lasting impression in the lives of the writers. And then with great amazement that the man wanted to know how to be perfect or whole and complete, as Matthew writes in his version of the story, not lacking in anything, Jesus now, with love beyond measure, looking at him with love beyond measure, he tells him how to do it. He says, you're lacking one thing. This is it. Go sell everything you own, give it to the poor, and come follow me. What a wonderful invitation. A wonderful invitation. Jesus is saying, come and walk with me. Walk with me. Now, it's true, he says, that you'll be poor financially because you're giving everything away. But he says to him, I'm going to provide you with the finest bread from heaven. Remember the prayer that I prayed? Give us this day our daily bread. I'm going to provide you with the bread from heaven that money can't buy. This story reminds me of Jesus on a couple of other occasions. One is when he was standing at the seashore as Peter and Andrew, James and John, they were cleaning their nets after a night of fishing, that Jesus comes up and he says to them, follow me. He says, follow me. And what do? Well, they ignore him and they go back to mending their nets, don't they? No, they don't do that at all. It says immediately they dropped their nets and they followed him. It also reminds me about the story of Matthew. When Jesus encounters Matthew. Matthew was a tax collector, and he was sitting there on the road in Capernaum in the tax collector's stand, and Jesus comes up to him and says, Matthew, follow me. And what does Matthew do? He keeps counting the money. No, it says he immediately gets up and he follows him. So the question is, which is also the question to you, when Jesus says to follow me, what are you going to do? What are you going to do when Jesus says, make me your greatest treasure in life? And this leads us to the second event that is recorded in no other stories in the gospel. And it is this. Always when you read about someone coming up to Jesus with great sincerity, kneeling before him and asking a question, they always received what they were looking for. But it didn't happen in this story. Instead, the man went away empty-handed because his treasure, along with his heart, lies somewhere else. Jesus was not his treasure. Seeking God was not his treasure. And we are told that he was saddened. His face went down when he walked away. He was deeply grieved because he was too attached to his other treasure in life. He just couldn't let go. Now, I know this in my own life because I like to follow Jesus. I know when I say no to God that I am left deeply saddened. But I also know that when I say yes to God, I am filled with peace. What a wonderful difference and what a wonderful thing that is. Now, what kinds of treasures does someone like myself wrestle with? In my life, since things like wealth and power, they don't mean anything to me anymore. Although when I was young, they meant a lot to me, but now they don't mean anything to me. What are some of the things I wrestle with when it comes to putting Jesus first? Well, let me give you just a few of them. To be a good pastor. To see the church grow and to thrive. To see you grow as in your faith with Jesus. To be liked by people, and to see everyone in my family doing well. Those are some of the treasures that I wrestle with when it's between God and me. But I suppose that we can only hope for this man, as well as for ourselves, that we eventually come to our senses and we give Jesus first place in our lives. That's the only place to go. So I'd like to leave you with two thoughts for reflection this morning. First of all, the message hashtag is follow me. Simple question, and you know the answer to it as soon as I ask it. Do you consider Jesus to be your greatest treasure? You know the answer to that, boom, right off the bat. And the second thing is this, what is your life like today? Maybe today is one of those times where you hear the voice of Jesus calling out to you to follow him more closely. If so, say yes. God bless each and every one of you.